And the theater is also unique for me in that I believe that the theater starts conversations, it doesn't finish them.
This week on Pop of Culture, from Connersville, Indiana to Lincoln, Nebraska, making new plays in the heartland.
And then we'll take flight.
We call it buddy boxing, but a person, anybody, a youth or an adult can take control of an airplane and actually fly it.
Coming up on Pop of Culture from IPR.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and by sustaining members of IPR. Become a member today at indianapublicradio.org.
From Indiana Public Radio, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Kara Duquette.
And I'm Jen Blackmer.
Later this hour, we take to the skies.
But first, over 20-plus episodes of Pop of Culture, we've learned that artists and audiences are everywhere. An artist's life can often take them to the most unexpected places. Regardless of how they get there, creators can be relentless, making work and cultivating audiences for that work that then resonates across multiple communities to an even greater impact. Timothy Scholl is one such artist, a theater director with roots in East Central Indiana, who found himself making art in another Heartland town. Timothy is artistic director of Angel Theater Company, a company devoted to developing and producing new plays in Lincoln, Nebraska. Angel's Theater Company has a very specific mission. Do you want to, why don't you give us a little bit of history of the company and then tell us what that very specific mission is?
Of course. So Angel's Theater Company is about 30 years old here in Lincoln. It was started by three professional actors who were looking for things to do in the community, as opposed to having to travel to coast. So, you know, right up your alley in terms of this mission. The mission of Angels Theater Company is simply create, develop, and produce. And what we mean by that is we want to be the theater company that creates, develops, and produces new work right here in our community, work that is tied to our community, and work that is relevant to the things that our community is experiencing. And the second part of that that I think is important is that we are both developing and producing. When I did a very short and non-scientific survey of other theater programs and new play development that I find in the world, I find really important theaters and important places that are developing and really important places that are producing. But I rarely find places that do both.
You are very correct in your unscientific research. As somebody who does write new plays, it's very hard to find opportunities to work on the play and then see it culminate in a production.
In a production, right. I joke when I talk to our company and when I talk to some of our audience members, I say, I believe in new plays. I believe in old plays too, in that I believe that they exist, but I believe in the power of new plays.
That's excellent.
And I will still go to see old plays.
But okay.
In fact, last night I went to see the touring company of To Kill a Mockingbird. Was at the local touring house.
Right, and this is the national tour of the Aaron Sorkin adaptation, correct?
Yeah, this is the Aaron Sorkin, and it is starring Richard Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And so for what we do at Angels, I want to continue working with playwrights, developing scripts that end up in a production. Now, we're not able to do this with all scripts, obviously. But I want to try to produce as much as we can because I think that process is so important.
So let's talk about that for a moment. You mentioned in your mission statement that Angels Theater Company produces and supports, develops new plays that are tied to the community. Can you talk about that and what you think that means?
Yeah, that's actually something that's very critical and crucial, I think, to our mission is that the theater does not exist in a vacuum. The theater is reflective. You know, Shakespeare tells us that theater holds a mirror up to nature, but that reflection is something that we have to take very seriously and look at where we're doing these plays. And so I think that it's incumbent upon all theater artists to make sure that they are reflecting and talking and engaging in a conversation with their community. So we will do projects, and when we do new plays, I try to never do a new play in a vacuum. And what I mean by that is that when we bring a new play into production through Angels Theater Company, we want to start a conversation. And the theater is also unique for me in that I believe that the theater starts conversations, it doesn't finish them. And so I want to start a conversation in our community through a talk back or through a lecture or through an introduction of a topic. Then we'll hold the play.
Oh, okay, so the introduction then is before the production. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. So before the production, there's an introduction. Then we have the production. And then after the production, we have a conversation about what we saw, or a conversation about why this was an important part of our community. So let me use by example a play that I know is very close to your heart. we did a world premiere of Predictor.
Sure. And just for our audience members who are unaware, Predictor is a play about the invention of the home pregnancy test.
Indeed. And prior to that, as you well know, we held a conversation with a local legislator and with the playwright and with the subject of the play. Mm-hmm. Then we held the production, and following the production, we engaged in several community conversations about that production and why that topic and why the importance of Meg Crane's invention is as relevant today, perhaps more relevant than it was at the time.
So I really love this idea of the play and the production serving as one part of a larger engagement strategy, right? And what is your ultimate hope for those events that you do?
So I believe firmly, and this is going to be a narrow definition, right? But I believe firmly that the theater's chief strength and chief ability is to engage audiences in compassion. The Germans call this idea Mitleid, or to suffer with. Now, because everything in German tends to be very dour, suffer with doesn't necessarily mean that you have to suffer with. You can also express joy with, or you can be with a person in regardless of how they're feeling. But I think that the theater has a responsibility to engage an audience on a level that other art forms just can't do. So part of that is in its ephemeral nature, right? It happens live in front of a live audience. So you feel something, even in the largest houses, along with, you know, 3,600 of my closest friends last night. We engaged in Aaron Sorkin's version of To Kill a Mockingbird. It was still very moving. But there's something different about seeing that play with live actors and seeing the Gregory Peck movie, or even an updated movie.
Or reading the novel.
Or even reading the novel, correct. You know, I didn't plan on talking about this, but I'm going to talk about this.
That's okay. That's usually how this goes.
There was an article that was just written in Playbill magazine about the play Here There Are Blueberries. The way they talk about this play is that this play becomes an artifact of a different way that we talk about the Holocaust because of the discovery of this picture album with, you know, essentially vacationing Nazi soldiers outside of Auschwitz.
Right. Yes.
And one of the reasons they say that this is so moving and so profound is that there is an element of truth that one gets on stage because of the presence of a live actor, because of the community engagement that is happening with that actor on the stage. And I'm really entranced, enraptured by that notion that we're finding our truth, we're finding some sort of commonality as we watch a play, as we're able to see a story or empathize with a character and empathize with a person in this live art form. I think that's incredibly powerful. And the article does a great job of kind of elucidating why this is important. Another thing it says that I was struck by is that, let me actually find the quote and read this, if you bear with me. The quote from Sarah Bloomfield, director of the Holocaust Memorial Museum, says, "The least trusted parts of our society when people are polled in surveys, or the government, big business, and social media. One of the most trusted? Museums. Why? Because we show original artifacts, we give people the information, and we let them make decisions for themselves."
Yes, yes.
I find that the theater is really good at mimicking a museum in this regard.
But the good parts of the museum, not the notion of the dusty back rooms of the museum that nobody visits. And this goes back to what you said earlier about old plays versus new plays, correct?
Yeah. There can be something, you know, one of the reasons I think that To Kill a Mockingbird is relevant right now is, one is the subject matter, you know, obviously. But two,
yes,
is because that Aaron Sorkin did a renewed version of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this new version is reflective of what Sorkin is thinking about and what is on his mind at this point in time. Therefore, it is reflective of what our culture and our society are doing right now.
Yes, and there's a theory of adaptation that talks about the fact that adaptations themselves are never the same as the story that initially inspired them, right? Because it is, yeah, being written here and now and today by a writer working steeped in their own cultural conversations.
Correct. I think that's very accurate.
Now, you mentioned that the theater does an excellent job of starting the conversation, but not concluding it, I guess. I think I'm paraphrasing what you said earlier a little bit, but
yeah,
can you elaborate on that a little bit more about that notion of theater almost as presenting evidence in the same way as a museum might?
Yeah, I think the plays that I am drawn to, and maybe that's the caveat there, but the plays that I am drawn to are the plays that ask deep questions. And it's not the job of the playwright or the play to answer those questions. But I think we find a lot of relevance and we find a lot of truth in our own experience of watching those questions play out. All of this is sounding overtly philosophical, and I don't mean to be that way, but, you know, something that's in my head right now and that I've been thinking about since this article in Playbill magazine is that when the theater presents something on stage, we see it and we feel it as a truth. That doesn't mean that the facts are agreed upon.
Right.
So watching last night To Kill a Mockingbird, we all felt a certain level of truth about that play. But if we were asked to sit down and write down the facts, they may be very different. But I think that truth is still really important and still something that the theater is responsible for bringing as an art form.
This is, I think, what we are wrestling with right now as a society, because,
yeah,
this notion of alternative facts or multiple truths or things subject to interpretation, which has always been the case, but
right,
it's only recently, I think, that notion has been weaponized, that is in fact something that's used to divide us rather than unite us. And what I hear you saying, Timothy, is that the theater, in its ephemeral nature, doesn't allow for that to happen. Is that correct?
I think that's right. Yeah, I think that truth is something so big and so, I'm not sure it can be stated. I think it has to be felt.
Right.
We can feel that something is true, and we can even say that the facts that get us to that truth may be different, but that doesn't change the importance or the magnitude of the truth.
Right. Regarding this notion of empathy that you mentioned earlier, I remember in one of our early conversations about Predictor, there's a scene in the play that is very emotionally charged. And I remember you telling me at one point that the scene is compelling because even though you may not agree with what is happening or with this particular character's interpretation of the events, you can't look away.
Right.
And so there's something about the act of putting something on stage, being live and in real time and sharing that experience together that makes us more apt to understand each other.
Yes, 100%. And I think about that moment frequently. And I think that's one of the most powerful and compelling moments of Predictor, is that we encounter this young woman and we don't have to agree with what she decides or the choices that she considers. But we can't walk away from her humanity. We can't walk away from the compassion we feel for the predicament that she's in. And we have to feel her truth. I feel like I'm overusing the word truth, but...
Well, it's important, though, and it is, in fact, the fuel, I think, that drives good storytelling, regardless of what form of art you're creating. So this is heavy work, it's important work, and we love it, of course. Why do it in Lincoln, Nebraska?
Well, the short answer is that's where I live. So I can't move somewhere else when I have a responsibility and even a tie to the community here. And this is not to belie that you know, every theater has a community and an audience and a group of people that they serve. But I think that it's important wherever you are. We've talked about this a lot in different formats and in different areas, but one of the big challenges with creating new plays and with producing new plays is, to use the example that we've been talking about this whole time, I went to see To Kill a Mockingbird last night. And I knew exactly the story I was going to get, and I knew exactly what the play was going to be about, and I knew I was going to like it. When I pick up and see a play or get asked to see a play called Predictor, or to be asked to see a play, Here There Are Blueberries, or a play that is an unknown, that is a much tougher sell. And so one of the things that you have to do, especially in a small community, is you have to make sure that you educate your audience. And you have to train them, and I don't mean this at all pejoratively, but you have to train them to tune their ears to new work. And so we've been doing this for a number of years with Angels Theater Company and a lot of our programming. We hold monthly readings of new plays for a small audience. We talk about new plays, of course, every time we get a chance. But we get people excited about the fact that this is a new play and that this is a new play that is currently being written. And we have to train audiences so that they understand that, you know, when you go see a Shakespeare play, next week I'll go see Love's Labor Lost here by the local Shakespeare company. I know that play, and when we go see that play, we know what we're going to get, and it's easy to sell tickets to that. But it's harder to get people involved in a script that they've never heard about.
The thing I like to tell folks when they ask me, well, why should I go see a new play? My answer is because every play was once a new play. So even To Kill a Mockingbird had a world premiere. Love's Labor's Lost had a world premiere at some point, right? And so those audiences at some point took a risk in going to see an unfamiliar story. And then for obvious reasons, they were moved. And so then they tell their friends and their friends go and see it. And so then that is how something becomes a familiar piece of art. But every piece of art was once a new piece of art.
And so I think what we're trying to do is train audiences to tune their ears and tune their mind to new plays. Because by doing that, you're selling the new play as opposed to the title. You're also giving them an experience that what you see on the stage may be different in the future. You're seeing a play in process. So you then need to train your audience how to talk about those new plays, how to receive these new plays, how to really dig in and analyze what they're seeing on stage and how that's making them feel. And, you know, the playwrights, I'm not going to speak for all playwrights, but I think I run into a lot of playwrights who really find that experience valuable because that helps them then improve the play for the next iteration.
Yes, absolutely. And that is really the piece of the puzzle, I think for me at least, the largest piece of the puzzle of that second half, where you spoke earlier about being committed as much as you possibly can to seeing new plays to production, that the only way you can gauge an audience's response is through that, because the world has been fully realized. There are sets and costumes and there's lighting and there's timing and the actors know their lines. And so the audience becomes a participant in that process. And from at least in my experience as a writer, the only way I can work with that information is through production.
Yeah. When we produced This Mortal Life Also by Nancy Schenck, we're telling the story of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, right? And I resisted in directing this production any kind of Nazi iconography, because this is not a play about Nazis. It's a play about Dietrich Bonhoeffer and the choices that he had to make that ultimately led to the end of his life. But you also can't tell a story about Dietrich Bonhoeffer without some Nazis.
So there are Nazis there, unfortunately.
There were Nazis. So we just made the decision in production to not have any of the iconography visible on the stage. Well, when he's arrested, you have to have iconography. So I specifically staged it so that the armband that the actor who is arresting Dietrich was wearing was upstage. As soon as that actor turned around and that symbol became visible on stage, there was an audible murmur, grumble, gasp every evening, because that symbol had such power and took people by surprise at that moment. And because the rest of the play, that iconography was nowhere to be seen, it became a shock. It became an electric moment. And that's one of those things that's not written in the script, but is in really embedded in the production of a play. And those are the kind of things that I think we as theater artists want to see and that playwrights need to see out of their work.
Agreed. 100% agreed. Timothy, it has been an absolute pleasure spending time with you today, and thank you for your insights about theater and community and producing theater in smaller communities, and best of luck with Angels in the future.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure talking with you, as always, and thank you for helping me check an item off my bucket list.
We've been speaking with Timothy Scholl, Artistic Director at Angels Theater Company in Lincoln, Nebraska. I'm Jen Blackmer.
And I'm Kara Duquette. Did you know the Academy of Model Aeronautics is based right here in Muncie? Every year, their National Fun Fly event brings hundreds of flying enthusiasts to the city. Our producer, Luke Jones, spoke to some of the organizers.
Hi, Luke. I'm Steve Haston. I'm the director of the foundation here at the Academy of Model Aeronautics.
I'm Rachel Hahn, Academy of Model Aeronautics Foundation donor and program specialist.
And I'm Kyle Jarris. I'm the education director here at the Academy of Model Aeronautics.
Excellent. And we've got you all here to talk about this National Fun Fly event that is this coming weekend. But before then, some folks might not be aware that the Academy of Model Aeronautics, known as the AMA, is actually headquartered in Muncie. Can you talk a little bit about what the organization is and what the connection to Muncie is?
Yeah, certainly. So Kyle Jarris here. The AMA has been around as an organization, actually, since 1936. And what we focus on are pretty much anything that flies that doesn't have a human inside of it. That's our bread and butter. It's what we enjoy doing. And we do that as a hobby. We also have lots of different sporting elements that go along with that. And then even potential careers that utilize those kinds of aircraft in the national airspace. And as part of that goes, we work very closely with organizations like the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, for those who might not know, as well as lots of other partner organizations like NASA, who you've probably heard of, the EAA, Experimental Aircraft Association, and several others to really celebrate flight and the opportunities to enjoy aviation.
Nice. So what exactly do you do at your headquarters in Muncie? And I know there's also the museum attached, or not attached, but within the same general area.
So I will tell you, when AMA was founded, it was actually founded in Washington, D.C., and then it later moved to Reston, Virginia. And then in the early 1990s, it moved here to Muncie, Indiana, out here by the bypass on East Memorial Drive. They moved us out here because they thought it would be a good centralized location for our members. We have members all over the country and also in some foreign countries, and they felt like this was a good property and a good space for them to all kind of meet together, to fly together. Here we do all kinds of different things. We have our foundation here, of course. We have education department here. We have a membership department. We have about 195,000 members. We have a publications department that produces a monthly magazine, a print magazine, and a digital magazine that goes out every month. We also have a government relations department, or government affairs department, that is often in Washington, D.C., meeting with officials there who make decisions basically and rules about model aviation and other unmanned or uncrewed aircraft. And then also across the drive here, we have the National Model Aviation Museum that has thousands of artifacts. I've been told the first artifact dates back before the Wright brothers' first flight. So it's pretty, pretty old. We have, in addition to airplanes and propellers and motors and engines, we also have a whole library of model aviation resources that people can come and visit and get photocopies of and read through.
In other words, there's a lot to see. Make sure you come out and visit. And, you know, that's kind of what we're here to talk about, which is the upcoming National Fun Fly for the community. And we're really excited about that event.
Yeah. Perfect segue, Kyle. Tell us all about it. What is happening? What is there to experience this weekend?
Yeah, Luke, this is Steve. And we're very excited about the National Fun Fly. This is a annual event that we host out here at the AMA. And this year, our 1,100 acres are open to the public. It's a community event. And it's really designed to inspire the youth and the other folks in the community all about aviation and other STEM avenues. As Kyle mentioned, many of these folks move into career paths that have shaped the entire face of aviation and spaceflight across the world. So this year, at the front of the Academy of Model Aeronautics, we will have a RC boating happening on our pond. We have a speaker series where we have women in aviation coming in, and we have some other professors who will talk to visitors about STEM and how aviation impacts the youth and the future. We also have drone demonstrations, and we have drone racing league will Ooh. Be at the museum site as well. And then from there, as you move back to our site, what we call site one, we'll have RC aircraft, and that is, we call it buddy boxing, but a person, anybody, a youth or an adult can take control of an airplane and actually fly it in the comfort of a pilot's hands who can take control if something were to go on.
That sounds like the kind of flying I would need to do.
Well, I mean, the idea is to take away some of the stress that's associated with learning to fly model aircraft.
Yep.
And also just trying out ground vehicles, RC boats, as you mentioned. Yeah. There's going to be rocketry happening on site, as well as free flight models to both build for youth and then participate with, fly, enjoy. And I don't know if we've mentioned this yet, but free of charge, like absolutely no charge to our community members. Like, we want to celebrate aviation, and we see ourselves as a great channel for those aviation, whether it be the hobby, the sporting elements, or a future career in aviation. So,
yeah. And on that, for the folks who are coming who aren't AMA members, or maybe they're a fan of actual, you know, passenger planes, what do you hope that they learn when they're at National Fun Fly this weekend?
I hope, number one, that they have fun and relax and enjoy themselves. Yeah. That's my hope. But I also want them to see the connection between the hobby and full-scale aviation. We have some members who are astronauts, who work for NASA, who designed aircraft that fly on Mars. I mean, that everything in the hobby is related basically to something full scale. So I want them to see that, and the fact that if they started in model aviation, that might to lead to some kind of career in aviation, aeronautics, or engineering.
I love that answer. What about you, Steve? What do you hope for?
I want the parents to see that by supporting their kiddos, that there's a tremendous number of opportunities in it. And it's a hobby and a sport that can lead them into, hands-on experiences and get away a little bit from, you know, the everyday drudge of being on a device and doing things like that.
Yeah, I really love that I hadn't thought of this, it's a tangible way for youth to see an opportunity in a STEM field. They can touch it, they can feel it, they can see something fly or motorboat on a pond, and it can spark that enthusiasm.
Definitely. And that's really what we're here to do, is spark that creativity and that imagination and do so in a way that's accessible. You know, you don't have to spend tens of thousands of dollars and get your private pilot license and start there. You know, there's easier ways to access the skies.
Wonderful. All right, let's get the event details down. I know it's this weekend, Friday the 28th through Sunday the 30th. When and where can people come out and find you?
Yeah, so the event is a three-day. The main community event for local folks is on Saturday, June 29th, and we're going to have the property open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., the entire 1,100 acres and events at all those sites. And as Kyle said, it's free of charge.
We're going to have shuttles with free transportation across the site. So if you need to go from one activity to another, you're welcome to hop on one of our shuttles.
And can I jump in really quick and
share? Of course.
If you go to modelaircraft.org /funfly, that should get you to our website where you can read all about the different activities that are happening. We've barely scratched the surface. This is truly going to be a celebration of all things aviation.
Excellent. All right, that is Rachel Hahn, Kyle Jarrett, and Steve Haston, all with the Academy of Model Aeronautics. Thank you all so much for your time.
Thank you, Luke.
My pleasure.
I'm Luke Jones.
I'm Jen Blackmer.
And I'm Kara Duquette. We're going to ask another artist, what are you working on? Sean Orlowski is a local actor and visual artist. His visual artwork is remarkable, and Sean is an accomplished actor who's performed in many shows at the Civic Theater in Muncie, Indiana, displaying a wide range of talent from dramatic to comedic. He also designs sets for stage and is a member of the cast of Tom Cherry's old-time radio show at Farmland Community Center. Sean, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We want to know what you are working on.
Well, right now I'm very excited because I am about to do my 150th play. I am debuting at the Geyer Opera House in July to play Black Stash in Peter and the Starcatcher, which will open in late July. I believe we will open on July 19th, and I am very excited about it. I'm working with a fantastic group of people. We have a brilliant director in Mason Llewellyn, who I recently worked with at the Muncie Civic Theater on an original play called Fixing Up back in March by my very good friends John and Jenny Marsh. So I've been so lucky this year to get to work with amazing people, and this is just a really cool milestone I'm getting ready to hit. I'm very excited.
That is an incredible amount of work. That is so wonderful to hear.
Well, it hasn't felt like work at all. It's been 30-odd years of fun, and I'm not looking to get off the roller coaster anytime soon, as long as, you know, desperate directors and producers will have me. I am absolutely delighted to keep it going.
Well, can you talk to us a little bit about some of your favorite things about acting?
I love getting to tell a story, and there is a wonderful, it's a $10 word, but there is a privilege that comes with being able to tell an audience a story, to take them out of life for a couple of hours, and whether it's a funny story or something that provides catharsis of some kind, you know, there is something really magical about getting to be a part of a team that gets to do that. And the really exciting thing is, you know, I do have a couple things in the pipeline right now, but you never know what next year is going to bring, the year after that. I mean, I definitely have plays I would love to do in the future, but so many wonderful surprise things come up each year, and I meet so many extraordinarily talented, gifted, generous, and giving people doing this. I mean, it has fed me in so many ways.
Can you talk a little bit about the relationships that are formed, like, behind the scenes in terms of what we see on stage?
Absolutely. You know, the audience watching a show, they're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. And that is how it should be. They should be able to simply, you know, enjoy the show or take, you know, what there is to be taken from the story unfolding in front of them. But there are a typical rehearsal period will be about 5 to 6 weeks of drilling lines, figuring out blocking, which is the action on stage, and figuring out, you know, how does it feel when we approach this way, or what does costuming do? You know, how does that help or hinder the action on stage? And it's 1,001 things to figure out, lighting and set dressing, which I've gotten to do a number of times. And, you know, it's a whole bunch of minutiae that has to be figured out. And it's such a collaborative piece of work in that, you know, yes, the director has the final say, but anyone can come up with an idea, and if it works, it goes in. You know, there's no pride of authorship of an idea, and so everyone, you know, when it's working well, is on board to make the best show they possibly can.
Well, that's amazing. Collaboration like that is just energizing. Can you share with us one of your favorite characters?
One of my very favorite things that I've gotten to do in the last few years was a play called I Hate Hamlet, in which I got to play the ghost of the actor John Barrymore, who was this grand, larger-than-life guy with a fondness for drink on the side. And that it was a character who just encapsulated everything I love. It was the golden age of Hollywood. It was 19th century theater. It was William Shakespeare. And, you know, I got to prance around in tights and do sword fights and do these incredible florid monologues. It was everything I wanted in life.
I was wondering if you could, can you give us a couple of lines from your character that you love so much?
A little bit of John Barrymore?
Yeah.
Let me see here. It's been 4 years. This was one play that we... This is one play where I love doing it, and it broke my heart because we opened the week that COVID became a thing in the United States. So we only got to do one weekend of performances, but I, let me...
Well, and no pressure.
No, not at all. What makes a great star? A florid vocal personality? No. Tights, my boy. All the way back to the second balcony, they notice the tights.
Fabulous.
Something like that.
I love it. Sean, thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. I've been keeping three scripts right now in my head. I've got I could do a little bit of Black Stash much more easily right now for Peter and the Starcatcher.
Well, feel free.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Black Stash. Perchance you think a treasure trunk, some treasure, has put my piratical BVDs in a twist? How wrong you are. Yes, I'd hope to be hip-deep in diamonds, but they're a poor substitute for what I really crave. A bona fide hero to help me feel whole. For without a hero, what am I? Half a villain, a pirate in part, ruthless but toothless.
Fabulous.
I don't know if you can tell, but I am having so much fun in this part.
Yeah. It's like embodied. Wonderful.
By the end of the season, I will be able to sing along with Frank. I've been a puppet, a pirate, a pauper, a poet, a pawn, and a king.
Perfectly.
Touché.
Well, it's just been a pleasure to talk to you. Is there anything else you'd like to talk to us about today?
Just come on over to Louisville in July and check out Peter and the Starcatcher at the Geyer Opera House. Tickets are available at geyeroperahouse.com. And if you're in the Muncie area in September, feel free to come by the Casaza Family Studio Theater and check out The Book of Will.
It's time for this week's Arts Calendar and events going on this weekend in East Central Indiana.
The Indiana Black Expo's summer celebration is in the Indiana Convention Center now through Sunday, June 30th. Explore hundreds of vendors, interactive experiences, conversations with cultural curators, and music. Also, on Friday, June 28th, the Indiana Black Expo's Music Heritage Festival starts at 6 p.m. Tickets and the full list of IBE events are at summercelebration.net.
As you heard earlier in the show, the Academy of Model Aeronautics, or AMA, National Fun Fly takes flight this weekend, June 28th through 30th in Muncie. Explore the National Model Aviation Museum, build and fly your own airplane and rocket, see drone delivery demos, and listen to guest speakers. Prep your takeoff checklist at modelaircraft.org/funfly.
The Indiana Army National Guard's 38th Infantry Division Band marches into Hartford City and Newcastle this weekend. As the only military band in the state of Indiana, the 38th Infantry Division Band performs everything from patriotic songs to jazz to pop music. boots or sneakers on the ground at Weiler Plaza in Hartford City, 7 p.m. Friday, and then at Arts Park Pavilion in Newcastle, 6:30 p.m. on Saturday.
And speaking of boots, cowboy boots, country music. For nearly 30 years, Gary Allen has been making music, and he's collected 3 platinum albums, 4 country radio number ones, and has toured across the nation. He takes the stage in Wabash at the Honeywell Center's Ford Theater, Friday, June 28th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are at honeywellarts.org.
Now to the Anderson Museum of Art, where a new exhibit spun up earlier this month, Intertwined 2, a contemporary fibers exhibit. This show features 2 galleries with innovative work rooted in traditional fiber materials, as well as a gallery of judged submissions from Midwestern artists with works related to the fiber medium. Museum information can be found at andersonart.org or by calling 765-649-1248.
Pencil this one into your calendar. The James Whitcomb Riley Museum Home has a comic creators camp July 15th through the 19th for campers from 2nd grade through 6th grade. Kids will learn from professional Indianapolis cartoonist Josh Smart, a.k.a. Mr. Smart. They'll work on all aspects of comics, including character design, story creation, page layouts, dialogue, and more. And at the end of the week, campers will head home with their own original graphic novel or comic. Comic Creators Camp is pick up and drop off, and more information is at rileymuseumhome.org.
Do you have an event Pop of Culture listeners should hear about? Tell us at indianapublicradio.org/popofculture.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and by sustaining members of IPR. Become a member today at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. This week was produced by our very own flyboy, Luke Jones, and it was hosted by me, Jen Blackmer.
And me, Kara Duquette. Pop of Culture is a production of Indiana Public Radio on the campus of Ball State University.